I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Roundtable. I'm your host, Jake Jackman, and you can reach us at the show by emailing us at championshiproundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm George. I'm a Rotherham United supporter and an aspiring sports journalist. I write for the Football Forecast and I also make YouTube videos. My Twitter handle is GeorgieRUFC.
I'm Paul Binning, the Exiled Robin on Twitter. I write the Bristol City blog, exiledrobin.blogspot.com.
Hello, I'm Chris Marsh. I'm a Wigan Athletic supporter. I write sporadically for the Mud Hutter Football Express, Wigan Athletic fanzine. My Twitter handle is @lbalton.
Thanks so much for joining us today, guys. We'll start making rounds where each of us will have a few minutes to discuss what our club have been doing this week. There's been a double game week, so lots to talk about. We'll start with you, George. Talk us through what's been happening at Rotherham over the last week. Obviously, you got a win yesterday. You had first 3 points, so you must be in a good mood.
Yeah, I'm in a fairly good mood. On Tuesday, we held to a 3-0 defeat away at Brighton. I couldn't actually afford to go to that game. But from what I heard, we appeared to be facing the same issues in defence. We did look a bit better in attack than what we saw with the week before that, with the 3-0 defeat to Villa. But Brighton did dominate us with 62% possession. And this was always going to be a tough fixture for us. But I thought we'd put up a bit more of a fight, to be honest. But yeah, this Saturday we hosted Brentford in a game which we secured our first 3 points of the season. Brentford scared us with a number of early warnings from them, and we did create a number of chances. Youngster Izzy Brown, who we've got on loan from Chelsea, went through on goal one-on-one, and Brentford keeper Daniel Bentley saved it. We went 1-0 up through Danny Ward after 32 minutes. He scored against Brentford last season as well, and we managed to hold off Brentford for the rest of the game, and it's a real good confidence boost for us. And a much needed win, and we got a standing ovation by the supporters as well.
Yeah, a lot of people this season that are sort of predicting Rotherham as one of the teams to go down. I think I've said it before on this show. I think Rotherham might struggle. Maybe that's my own lack of knowledge about the league. I don't know. But what are your thoughts about Rotherham this season? Do you think that you are going to be in a relegation fight, or do you just think that you're being written off a bit too soon?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're going to be in a relegation fight. When you look at a lot of the teams at the bottom, I feel like we've got similar squads to them and it's so tight at the bottom. I am optimistic. I think we will stay up, but if we hadn't have won against Brentford, I'd be much less optimistic, I think.
Yeah, just moving on to you now, Chris. Obviously, it was quite an entertaining game yesterday for you guys. Unfortunately, you didn't win, but what was your thoughts on the past week at Wigan?
Been a bit of a mixed bag this week. We drew at home on Tuesday night with Birmingham in a game that we generally dominated without scoring. Went behind to a rebound from a penalty that, first of all, he was offside when he won the penalty. And then the guy that scored the rebound after the keeper had saved it, after Bogdan had saved it, was 2 yards inside the box before he even kicked the ball off the spot. So we were a bit unhappy about that, to be honest. But scored a late equaliser and snatched a point in a game that we didn't really look like we deserved to lose. We'd had a couple of decent chances. And then yesterday we go away to Nottingham Forest and score 3 away goals and still end up on the losing side again. So it was a bit of a strange one yesterday. I think it's early doors. We've let Jason Pearce go in the summer, and he and Craig Morgan last season had a very strong partnership at the centre of defence. I think out of the 20 games that they played alongside each other, we won 13 and drew 7 and didn't lose. So, and obviously that was, I suppose, towards the latter end of the season when we were cantering up the league. But we've replaced him with Dan Byrne from Fulham, who so far everyone seems to think he's useless. He played an awful back pass through last night for the first goal. It never ever going to get anywhere near the keeper. And he also looked at fault for a couple of the others from the highlights that I saw late last night. I didn't go to the game yesterday, but to go score three goals away from home and still not win is a bit disheartening. The one good thing I think so far this season is that Will Grigg is still scoring. There's been questions over whether he's been good enough for this league, because he's been promoted out of the League One twice, but immediately sold back down to League One clubs, and there was always that sort of question hanging over. But he's scoring goals, so that's a positive for me at the minute.
Yeah, obviously, if you do score three goals away from home, you're not going to be on the losing side too many times if you keep that up. So there is positive to take from that. You just touched on Will Grigg. That obviously he's like world famous now after that chart. I'd just like to know a bit more about him as a player. I haven't seen him that often. I just want to know what your thoughts on him as a player are, and like how good you think he can be.
I think he can go as far as he wants. He works hard for the team. He playing as a lone striker, and when he first came in last summer, early on in the season, he seemed to struggle, but I think we weren't necessarily playing to his strengths. He runs the channels well, he holds the ball up, he brings people into play, he never stops working, and he's a poacher. You flash a ball across a six-yard box, and more often than not, he'll tuck it away, but he scores all sorts of goals. He scored a brilliant header at Blackburn last Saturday that sort of, I don't know whether you've seen it, it was a miss-hit shot that went his way, and he just sort of reacted and looped it over the keeper. But I think he's been a fantastic signing for us.
Yeah, we'll just move on to Liverpool. Bristol City obviously had a very good start, got two wins in their first two games, and then since then come up against two relegated sides and have been on narrow defeats. What are your thoughts about Bristol City at the moment?
Yeah. I think you summed up quite nicely there. Yeah, I think a great start for us, 2 out of 2 and a League Cup win thrown in. So a great start to the season. But you know, looking at the fixture list, I think we knew going to Carrow Road and following up the home game against Newcastle was always going to be a big test, and I think so it proved. I think we're looking better organised than we were last year. We lost 4-0 a ridiculous number of times last year to a lot of top clubs. So in some ways, to come away with two narrow 1-0 defeats at Norwich and at home to Newcastle was almost a sort of sign of some improvement. But I think the main issue we've got, we're not actually creating enough chances. I think in both games, we've played pretty well. We've had a lot of possession. We've not been outclassed in the main. But we're just not creating those clear-cut chances and giving our strikers the sort of sight of goal they need to have an impact against a team like that. Partly, I think we're still just trying to work out who goes where. I talked about Jonathan Codger on this show a few weeks ago, and he scored 20 goals last year and hasn't really played up front in the position he played in yet in the four games. He's played sort of one of the two, and he's played out wide the last two games. And although he's played well, he's just not getting close enough to that goal, I don't think, to get the chances in. And what that also means is you've got Lee Tomlin sitting in behind, playing him in sort of number 10 role. And he had a lot of the ball yesterday against Newcastle, an awful lot of the ball in that sort of space, just 5-10 yards off the back four. But there was no one in front of him making little diagonal darting runs to you know, give him something to go for and give him an option. So, you know, no disaster yet, absolutely not. You know, 2-1-0 defeats, not to be sniffed at. But you know, a big game, another big game at home to Villa next Saturday to try and pick up the results again.
Yeah, a player you didn't mention there was Tammy Abraham. I just wanted to know your thoughts on him, because I saw Lee Johnson called him a £20 million player, I think, in the press a few weeks ago when he signed. I just wanted to know what you thought, how you think he's performed, and do you think that he is sort of at that level? And do you think that maybe Bristol City couldn't get a player like that if it wasn't for the loan market?
Certainly couldn't get a player like that if it wasn't for the loan market. Lee Johnson's... he's a bit like his old man, to be honest. He's very good at providing these little one-liners for press to pick up on, and that's certainly one of them, I think. I think what he was indicating was, if you've got a guy who's scored 3 goals in every 4 games at a top Premiership youth level, then and they can come and do a similar job in the Championship, then that's the sort of value they'd be worth. And it came out differently. He's got real potential. You know, he's an England under-19 striker. He's 6'5". He's pacey. He's got strength. He's got skill as well, which you don't always get of a tall player like that. And, you know, 3 goals in 3 games at the start of the season show he's got an eye for goal as well. And he has looked good. What impressed me, I went to see him at Wickham in the League Cup, and it was a tough old game against a lower league team, and we went one up. His game management skills for a 19-year-old I thought were excellent. You know, it's a sort of term fans might not like hearing out of managers and coaches, but
he was just holding the ball up, and he let the ball run out of play when it was our set pieces, rather than trying to get excited and produce fancy bits of skill and trying to do too much. I just thought he played a really mature game in that sort of front, you know, very much number nine type role. He's got real potential. He really has. And, you know, what he needs to start learning, and I think he's faced that in the last two games, is the slightly better defences. When you come up against Norwich and Newcastle, he's been somewhat nullified, and Norwich pretty much put two men on him and didn't let him move. And I thought Newcastle centre-halves yesterday were very solid. You know, they didn't do anything particularly exciting, but they're pretty solid and didn't really give him a sniff. And he's going to have to learn how to come off those strikers and find himself a bit of space, or find himself different angles to run in, which maybe he hasn't quite had that challenge yet in his career. And yeah, but that's exactly what he's with us for. And I guess really what, you know, exactly the point of a loan market for those Premiership teams is to give someone like that sort of test and challenge and try and build their experience up so they become better players.
Yeah, my thoughts on him yesterday were that maybe he struggled a bit with the physicality of our centre-halves, but, you know, that's something he's going to learn, and he's going to get better as the season progresses, and that's exactly why he's come online to Bristol City, to sort of get that experience. So, yeah, he looks like a very good player, and he sort of has the right instincts from what I've seen of Bristol City this season. So I think he's going to do very well this season. I'll just move on to Newcastle now. I'm obviously on the other side of that match against Bristol City, and I'm slightly happier. I've had to come on the last 2 weeks and sort of talk about defeats and where we've been pre-season favourites. That has been a bit disappointing, so I'm happy I could come on today and just talk about our back-to-back wins, which I can't remember the last time we've had back-to-back wins, so that's a very pleasing sign. Although it is in a division lower than what we're used to, it's still massively pleasing. The Reading game was, we didn't play too well. I think the scoreline flattered us on another day. We could have had another loss, but we took our chances. We look a lot better at the back. We're not conceding so many sort of silly clear-cut chances as we were at Fulham and against Huddersfield. So that's pleasing. It sort of shows the effect that Rafa's having on the training ground, which you'd expect him to, because, you know, he's a very good manager. And although he's adjusted to this division like our squad are, you know, he's doing well. And you could see in that match yesterday, it was sort of a typical sort of Championship game. We got the goal and then we sort of battled hard to keep it. I think we were very well organised and we didn't give up too many clear-cut chances. So, you know, that's, for me, that's, I'm very happy about that, because our defence in the first few games was very, very poor. So, you know, it looks like we're making progress. There's a lot of rotation going on in our squad at the moment. It doesn't look like he knows what his best team is. Even the captain got dropped in the week, which was weird, because, you know, he's only been captain for a few games. He's already been dropped. But this sort of shows that Rafa's not afraid to drop anybody, which you need to do in this league, because we've got a big squad. And if we are going to go up, we're going to need to take players out when they're not performing. And it sort of just gives them a kick up the arse. So, you know, we need to do that at times. But yeah, you know, it's getting a lot better. There's still a long way to go. I don't think either of our wins were sort of really good performances. I think we've dug in and done what we've had to do, but we haven't sort of got into that free-flowing football that we want to play this season. And I think as the season progresses, we will get better and better, and that's already shown. I'm really pleased with Dwight Gale, already top scorer in the league, and hopefully he's sort of going to stay up there, because we signed him for a lot of money. I wasn't totally convinced by him when we signed him. I thought, you know, he's been at Crystal Palace for quite a long time. He hasn't really had the minutes. I wasn't sure how he was going to fit into our system, but he seems to have fitted in perfectly. He's scored all types of goals, which I think is important in this league. He's not just sort of scoring like poacher's goals. He got his goal yesterday was really well taken. He scored a free kick in the week, and yesterday he could have scored again when he turned the defender and sort of fired in a snapshot from range. So again, that it showed his quality. And I think what is evident with Gale is he does sort of have that extra step. He has that extra level of quality where a lot of players in this league don't. So he's always going to score goals. And we've got Alexander Mitrovic coming back in after his suspension on Tuesday in the League Cup. So we'll see how he does. I think as a partnership, they'd work really well, because Mitrovic is sort of that tall target man, and Gale's sort of going to buzz in around him and sort of play off him, which, you know, in this league, partnerships like that do very well. It could sort of be similar to sort of what Sam Vokes and Andre Gray were last season. So I'm hoping that is the case. I think we're still going to do a lot of transfer business, both in and out. We've got Moussa Sissoko, looks like he could be going to Inter Milan for €35 million, which is ridiculous because he's not a very good footballer. Despite what you saw in the Euros, if you've watched him like I have for the last 3 years, he's not that good, and he's certainly not £35 million good. So, you know, we'll take that money and reinvest that. We've been linked with DeAndre Yedlin from Spurs, who I think would be a solid addition. And I think we're probably going to bring in a striker and maybe another winger. Newcastle fans have are sort of obsessed with Anthony Knockhart at the moment. They think we're going to sign him. I don't think we're going to sign him. I think there was maybe interest. We put a bid in and then we just got Brighton just returned to us and said we're not selling him, and then we've moved on. So Newcastle fans are obsessed with him at the moment. That's all they're talking about. They just really want to sign him, but I don't think that's going to happen. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of business, but you know, 2 wins out of 4, it's not maybe what we expected, but I think the 2 early losses were good to sort of, you know, lower expectations and sort of make us realise where we are. And the last couple of games shows that we've learned from that. So hopefully that continues, but we've got a tough run coming up. We play a lot of the top side, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, enough about Newcastle. I'll move on to the topics for today. I just want to talk about ownership, really, at each of our clubs, because there's more and more foreign investors coming into football. And I think we've seen it a lot in the Championship. Tony Gia at Aston Villa, very vocal on Twitter. And then there's obviously Chiellino at Leeds. So I just want to talk about the owners we each have at our own clubs and whether we're whether we are happy with them. So we'll start with you, George. What's the ownership situation like at Rotherham?
Rotherham United were run by Chairman Tony Stewart, who owns the ASD Lighting Group. I don't have a single bad word to say about the ownership of the club. In 2008, he bought the club. We were in administration, preparing for a season in League Two with a 17-point deduction. He basically saved the club from extinction. And in 2012, he took us from playing in exile at the Don Valley Stadium in Sheffield and built our new stadium back in Rotherham. And this brought people together again in the town. People are excited and proud of Rotherham United again. And he's took us on a crazy journey from League Two to the Championship. He seems to manage the club finances quite strictly, but I kind of like that because it's sensible. So he's not prepared to overpay for players, but he also ensures we have the right team to compete at this level. So, yeah, I'm entirely satisfied with it.
Yeah, Chris, Wigan, what is the sort of situation like? And are you happy with it? Is it sort of similar?
Our owner until recently was the famous Dave Whelan, who I'm sure you've all heard of. Towards the end of his tenure, it was a bit of an unmitigated disaster. He appointed Owen Coyle. That didn't go well. He appointed Uwe Rosler. That was not necessarily going right. I mean, he took us to the playoffs at the end of one season, and then we seemed to struggle at the start of the following season in the Championship, ultimately in the season that we got relegated. He sacked Rosler in November. Whereas quite a few of us felt that if he'd have given him till the end of January and let him sort out his squad, because there was rumours of a couple of players causing trouble in the squad, that if he'd have managed to get them out, we'd have been all right. We ended up with Malky Mackay, which again, unmitigated disaster. No one had any understanding as to why that had happened. The thing with Whelan was, pardon me, He had a son, or his son-in-law, I think it was, that unfortunately committed suicide a good 20-odd years ago. And if that hadn't have happened, Duncan would have been in charge long before we had these problems with Whelan getting towards the end of his tenure. His grandson, Whelan's grandson, Duncan's son, David Sharp, who's now in charge and sort of the owner, after all the business with Whelan in the papers with Malky Mackay, he stepped down and young David took over. Now, at the time, he was only about 21, 22, something like that. So he was the youngest owner of a football club in Britain. It was felt that sort of, it was always that Whelan was going to pass it on to him. It was just that he was too young to take over, and Whelan was getting on and getting a bit senile. Since David's come in, it's been fantastic. With the business with Mackay, a lot of people were disillusioned with what was going on at Wigan. It put sort of a sour note on the end of Whelan's tenure, because from Whelan taking over in 95 for the 20 years that he was in charge, it was fantastic. We rose up through the leagues. We had 8 years in the Premier League. It culminated with us winning the FA Cup and then unfortunately getting relegated in the same season. And then after that, it was a bit of trouble. But He let David take over, and David's been brilliant. He appointed Gary Caldwell, who was fantastic for us last season in League One. So we've got a really young chairman and manager combination, but they work well together. Caldwell had been at the club for a number of years, playing and then joining the coaching staff when he had to retire injured. And we haven't got a bad word to say about David Sharp. He's a fan. He's always been a fan. He's young. He's only 23, but he's grown up watching Wigan Athletic. He's a supporter like us. He just happens to be the one supporter out of all of us that owns the club. And he hasn't put a foot wrong so far. His transfer business has been astute. Where we've tried to sign players, he's done it in the right manner. we've had to cut our cloth accordingly. We're getting relegated, and obviously this is the last season of our parachute payments from getting relegated. But we've managed to get rid of players that we needed to get rid of because they were a big drain on the wage bill, and we've gone from having an aging team to a young, hungry team that cantered to the League One title last season, and last season was brilliant. It sort of, for want of a cliched phrase, felt like we had our club back after what had gone on previous.
That's really interesting because, you know, that could have went very, very badly wrong given his age and everything. So, you know, it's obviously gone well. You know, you got back into the Championship and you've got some good early results. It sort of looks like you're building something good at the club. It might be a slow project. You're not going to go and spend millions and millions, but, you know, it's better to have something like that than a foreign owner come in and do something completely stupid like it's happened at Leeds. You know, I think that sounds a lot more stable. So I think that's a good thing. Paul, what is the Bristol City ownership situation like? Are you happy with that?
Yeah, couldn't be happier. I think maybe the wrong fans for this. You could have done with some Leeds and Blackburn and Cardiff fans, perhaps. But Steve Lansdowne's been in charge now for, well, I'm not sure, 10 or 15 years at Ashton Gate. He's a Bristol boy. His son's on the board. So he's one half of Hargreaves Lansdowne, I think, of FTSE 100, the share dealing company. Billionaire, top 200 richest person in the country. And he's invested tens of millions of that wealth into the club. So, you know, the last any number of years, I think he's written off roughly £10 million losses a few years in a row, where he's been trying to build something and get us higher up the ladder. I guess the end result, really, of a lot of that was yesterday. So we actually had our biggest crowd in 26 years yesterday, and that's because he's pretty much knocked down three quarters of a stadium and rebuilt it, mainly on his investment. So, yeah, he's... Yeah, fantastic for the club. I think if there were one or two areas you'd look to question, a lot of fans don't like the Bristol Sport concept. Personally, I think it's very understandable and it works for business. But basically what he's trying to do is create a group of sports teams that he can use to generate more revenues off each other. So he's brought a rugby club under the fold and they now play at Ashton Gate, which they never did before. So the stadium and the pitch are being used, you know, another 15, 20 times a season. Bristol Ladies play their football. He's got a basketball team that they use. And it all makes a lot of sense. You know, you can buy tickets on the same ticket hub for all different sports. And you found that Bristol Rugby last year, I think, got 3,000 or 4,000 more fans roughly on average than they ever have done before. And that was a lot of Bristol City fans who have never really been before and never really tried it. So it all makes a lot of sense. It's all about utilising assets and generating extra revenue streams and all the sort of business speak that, despite fans wanting to spend a load of money on transfers, they don't really like hearing their owners and their MDs and their chief executives talking about, but it's essential. Something he actually saw in Barcelona when he went out there on holiday 10 to 12 years ago and thought a concept worked quite nicely and is trying to repeat something here on obviously a much, you know, much smaller scale. But yeah, and generally he's a businessman, so he's got £1 billion, but he's not investing sort of half of that in the club and trying to, you know, spend silly amounts of money. It's, you know, you could argue £10 million a year is silly, but, you know, he's not trying to spend £30-40 million we haven't got every season. I think if the one slight negative you would pick up on is maybe some of his managerial choices. And although we're told the board are always unanimous and they're always involved, certainly two or three of the names we've had over the time has been friends of his or friends of the board, rather than maybe the complete sort of search and scour of the land you'd maybe expect, and it hasn't always worked out like that. But you know, saying that, we couldn't be happier. You know, we're a good 40-50 positions higher up than we were when he took over. We've got a fantastic newly rebuilt stadium. We've got all sorts of facilities underneath that stadium, which makes such a difference. I mean, the difference to yesterday, having 22,000 there, which is, you know, 7,000 or 8,000 more than we had before. And an awful lot of them were in and around the stadium by 1 o'clock, buying food, drinking, watching TV on the big screens. And that's just facilities we never had before. So, you know, people are spending thousands, tens of thousands of pounds every week they never spent. And it's all part of that, you know, that vision he's put together. So, yeah, I think, you know, no complaints here, that's for sure.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, it seems like none of you really have that many complaints, so I'm going to have to take one here and just criticise Mike Ashley, which I can do, so I'm willing to do that. To be fair, he's got a lot better over the last sort of 6 to 8 months. I'd say he's got a lot. He's sort of being advised better, and he's not doing anything that stupid. There's been better fan engagement, good ticket prices. There's been investment into the squad. He's obviously brought in Benitez, who the fans love, and he sort of got him to stay here after relegation. So, you know, he is investing into the club, and he sort of does want the club to do well, because at the end of the day, he's not going to make any money of a club that's going downhill and sort of going down the league. So he wants to be in the Premier League because he wants that money. So that is probably where we're going to end up, whether it's this season, next season, or the season after. We will get back there. So, you know, he's doing everything he can to do that. And he's sort of, I'd say, out of the public eye. He's not really at the club. He never goes to games. He doesn't really comment on the club. He's just taken a step away from the club completely, which is probably what he needed to do, because the fans are never going to like him. He's done too many stupid things in the past. He renamed the stadium, the Sports Direct Arena, brought in Joe Kinnear as a director of football, and that was disastrous, to say the least. You know, lack of investment in the past, and then there was that load. There's been protests time and time again, so he's never going to be well liked at the club. I think he's slowly rebuilding sort of a relationship. He's employed the right people in the right places. He's not getting advised by people like Joe Kinnear anymore, which is good for Newcastle. And, you know, it does seem like there's going to be a new era at the club under Benitez, which, you know, I really would like as a fan, because I've had enough of sort of what had been going on. And you know, we've had two relegations under Mike Ashley, which is not good, considering he's only owned the club for sort of about just under 10 years. So it's not really great, is it, that we've had two relegations in that time? But, you know, it's getting better, and that's all you can ask for. I'd just like to ask each of you what you think of sort of the foreign ownership situations at Wolves and Aston Villa. Do you think, is that something that you'd welcome at your club if that sort of level of investment came in? Or do you think that, sort of the bad publicity that they get, obviously Tony Gia saying stuff on Twitter, like Aston Villa are going to be the biggest and most well-supported club in the world, That's only going to make you a laughing stock. But obviously he's investing in it, and it's sort of good to have those ambitions. I'd just like to know what your thoughts on that is. I'll start with you, George. Would you sort of welcome that level of investment at Rotherham, or it can go south very quickly as well, as we've seen at Leeds? So I just would like to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, certainly. I think I'd welcome it at some point, because obviously we're one of the smaller clubs in the Championship, and it would bring a lot of revenue and money. But it is a bit weird to see them on the social media accounts tweeting things like that. So perhaps it does have its downsides.
Yeah, it's the same question to you, Chris.
It's a bit of a strange one, because if you go back to when Dave Whelan took over Wigan Athletic in 1995, we were on the verge of going bust. So we've sort of had this situation, but from a slightly different angle. We had a millionaire owner who took us up through the leagues from the old Division 3 right up to the Premier League. And he did it. We used to get accused of sort of spending our way out of divisions. We did spend money, but most of the time we did it by offering better wages than most other clubs at the same level we were at. We did it, and we got into the Premier League, and we got into the Premier League at the time when, not long after, Roman Abramovich had taken over at Chelsea, and what was a millionaire's playground suddenly became a billionaire's playground, and we had an owner that didn't have enough money to compete there. So we were sort of... We've done this on a smaller scale, but with an Englishman in charge. Pardon me. Foreign ownership. I can't see it going any other way. It's only ever going to carry on happening, this sort of thing. The major thing I have with it is they're quite happy to pump all this money in, but like you said, things can go wrong. In particular, at Leeds, Portsmouth. Look at what happened to Portsmouth. There's numerous clubs down the years that have ended up in similar situations to Portsmouth. It's all right until we decide that they've had enough. But the other side of it is they're all pumping money in, and most of that money only ends up in one place, and that's players and agents' pockets. And at the same time, we're generally getting pumps for higher and higher ticket prices. I seen a thing the other weekend about Aston Villa have sold out 4,500 tickets at Sheffield Wednesday, I think it was, at £42, and people were saying, oh, well done, Aston Villa. Sorry, but we shouldn't be having to pay £42 for a game in the Championship. And it's all right saying, oh, the Premier League have capped tickets, away tickets at £30. Newcastle in particular, your club last season, did a lot of the reciprocal pricing, didn't they, with certain clubs, £20. You charge us £20, we'll charge you £20 for away games, which I think was fantastic. And it's all right with all the money sloshing around the Premier League, but when you get a step below that and there's not as much TV money knocking about, it's still us that are getting pumped for ticket prices. With regards to them on social media, I do think it's quite funny. There's enough idiot support club on supporting idiotic supporters tweeting rubbish on social media before the owners start joining in.
Yeah, reciprocal pricing is something that Newcastle did well, and I think we've always been good on prices. I don't think Mike Ashley's ever charged too much, and that's why St James' Park often sells out and you get good away following. So, you know, that is what owners should place above players and things like that, because at the end of the day, the fans are, you know, the club, and if you don't have supporters, you're not really going to have a club. But Paul, I'd just like to come to you on the Wolves situation in particular, because that is really interesting, because they're bringing in all these sort of foreign players, a lot of them with links to Jorge Mendes, the super agent who's sort of linked with Ronaldo and Mourinho. Would you sort of welcome that at Bristol City, just all these players coming in, sort of playing for a contract in England, then moving on to bigger and better things? That's what I think it is there. So would you welcome that, or do you think that that sort of destroys what the club is about somewhat?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that one in particular for me, just it already looks dodgy, doesn't it? You know, you've just got to wonder where on earth it's going to end. And, you know, maybe it will be, you know, a great story for them and get back in the Premier League with all these good players. But you've seen a few of these around and, you know, you just got to question, wonder whether, you know, how it's really going to end. I think the foreign is tricky. I think it's, you know, if you've actually done any analysis, are foreign owners any better or worse than British owners? I don't know. You know, there's been some pretty awful British owners in the, you know, the Football League in the last five, 10 years. And I guess until you actually, you know, do that analysis, you look at Leicester, foreign owners, everybody came in, they started talking about being in the Champions League and winning 5 years, and everyone scoffed at them. So, yeah, it does work out. Not all the time, but it does work out. But I think what you just talked about there in terms of Wolves, compare that with Leicester. Leicester's approach was to bring in some sort of solid million-pound type players to get them up, get them into, you know, where they needed to be and progress fairly gradually, although they had. And that would be the preferred method for me, if anything. You know, if you've got £10 million to spend, spend it on eight players, not on one or two players, and, you know, make something out of it in that way. And I think, you know, there's different approaches, but as I said, I don't think that's necessarily a foreign versus domestic ownership, you know, discussion. I think that's a general, rich, ambitious ownership discussion to have. And, you know, there's a lot of said British owners out there who are a lot worse than others. The extreme cases like Chelino at Leeds are obviously, you know, highlighted by the press, and they're a big club, so you see it a lot. But, you know, as I'm saying, I'm sure there's lots of others out there who you'd really not have in your club who are British as well.
Yeah. To grow, because at the end of the day, all these owners want a piece of the Premier League, and Premier League clubs are so expensive now that you can't really buy them, so you have to buy the Football League clubs to get them into the Premier League, and that's not easy. You know, it's not hard to get out of the Football League, so a lot of owners might come in, buy a club, try and get out of the Football League for a couple of seasons, can't do it, and then, you know, get relegated down the divisions. So I think it's going to be something we're going to see more and more of, unfortunately. But we'll just move on to player watch now. I'd just like each of us to discuss a player that played well and a player that didn't play well in our most recent fixture. If you don't have one of each, you can pick somebody from the opposition squad if you want to. So we'll start with you, George. Who impressed and disappointed in the most recent fixture for Rotherham?
I was impressed with Brown on his debut in our recent fixture against Brentford. He's on loan from Chelsea, and for someone who's only 19, he already has great experience. He played in the top Dutch league last season with Vitesse and played 24 games for them. He's already demonstrated his keenness to go up the pitch and take players on. He's very fast, which is always going to be a problem for defenders. He also showed an eagerness to win back possession. This is like highlighted when he tackled one of the Brentford players and went through on goal one-on-one. And I'm excited to see more from him in the weeks to come. In terms of disappointment, if you'd have asked me prior to our recent win, I'd have said new signing Kelvin Wilson, who's a centre-back from Forest who joined us. He started to scare me a bit. However, in our recent fixture, I think he played well. So in terms of a disappointment, I'm going to have to say Richie Smallwood, who played in our centre midfield. He came off on from the bench, and it's a bit of nitpicking because I feel like all our players played well for the first time, but he made a few stray passes and a couple of questionable decisions trying to get around players. But like I say, I was pretty satisfied with everyone.
Yeah, Izzy Brown was a very good signing when he signed. I thought he would do very well at Rotherham. I think he did okay at Vitesse. I saw him quite a few times last season because I do watch a lot of Dutch football. I think he did well, and I think it was the physicality he was perhaps lacking. So a move to Rotherham is a good move for him, and he sort of gets to test himself in the Championship. We'll just move on to you now, Paul. Who impressed and disappointed in the loss to Newcastle? I might enjoy listening to this, you know.
Start with positive. I think I sort of predicted at the start of the season that we had two or three bigger name signings, but Gary O'Neill for me was exactly the sort of experienced, battle-hardened midfielder we needed, and I thought he had an outstanding game yesterday, actually. I thought him and Jack Colback had a great battle in the middle of the park, and really went sort of face-to-face, and you know, both played well. You know, both came out of it in a good way, but you know, really battled hard, and he's just given us that bit of composure and that touch and control we need in the middle. When we have Corey Smith back alongside him, we're really looking forward to that sort of partnership and seeing how that comes, because Corey's been our sort of star midfielder for the last 2 years, and having O'Neill there alongside him could be really make it a really strong part of the pitch for us. The other guy who's really impressed me actually is the Icelandic defender we signed from Juventus, Magnusson. I mean, he just really composed on the ball, and he's a 6 foot something centre half, but he can ping a diagonal ball 40, 50 yards out to a touchline pretty accurately. He's had a couple of shots that haven't quite hit the mark, but you can see he's got a hell of a left peg on him. And you know, looking forward to seeing how he develops in English football, and hopefully can become a really established part of the side. Our main problem position, to be honest, at the moment is right back. We signed Adam Matthews in the summer on loan from, well, sorry, we signed him on loan last season. And we signed him for the season on loan from Sunderland. It seems he's come back. Well, I think the manager's words yesterday, he seems like he's had an 8-week summer holiday waiting to be signed and isn't fit enough. And he played for, I'm not sure how long it was, Jake, 10, 15 minutes yesterday, and had to go off with a hamstring injury. So we got a problem there because we sold Luke Ayling to Leeds last week, who has been our right back for a couple of years. So Mark Little came in. He's so his third choice right back, and he had an okay game yesterday, but he's had a couple of dodgy games so far this season. And I think we've got a real problem there. And from a position where we may be looking at having two more signings before the end of August, I think we're now very much looking at three with a loan in place to cover Matthew's injury, and hopefully he can come back and be fit. But it's a real shame because he's 24, but he's quite experienced. He looked solid last year, and he looked exactly what we needed in a solid right back position. But yeah, for whatever reason, he seems to have not necessarily come back to a club with the same level of fitness or even the same attitude he had last season, and needs to sort that out pretty quickly.
Yeah, just move on to you now, Chris. Obviously, I'm expecting a lot of defenders disappointed and a lot of attackers impressed, but is that the case?
Sort of. I think I alluded earlier to Greg impressing, playing well. So far this season, Yannick Wildshaw too. Absolutely ran rings around League One players last season, has looked okay, but doesn't really look like he's quite carried his form over, I should say. He's just a little bit off the boil, but he's another one. He's pace to burn. He'll cause a lot of defenders problems this season with his pace. Defensively, Dan Burney, we signed from Fulham to replace, before we let Jason Pearce go. I alluded to earlier, he's looked poor. But again, I suppose it's going to take time for them to get settled. But the other thing was, yesterday we seemed to, I don't know whether it's that we missed David Perkins because he was out injured. He was our player of the season last season, just sitting in front of the back four and stopping a lot of what was pressuring our defence. And we seem to have missed that yesterday from speaking to people or reading Twitter regarding yesterday's game. It was the midfield more than anything that let us down yesterday, and the defence come under too much pressure as a result of the midfield not really having hold of the game properly.
Yeah, I didn't go to the Newcastle game yesterday because I couldn't sort of get the logistics right. But I did watch the game on Periscope with one of the supporters did film the game, which has happened every single match this season for Newcastle, which is an interesting way to watch the game because obviously you're going to waste up your phone battery videoing the game. So I did watch the game and I thought Dwight Gayle obviously impressed. He got his goal. He sort of had one or two chances and took it. So that's really pleasing because you have to be, you know, that deadly when you get chances, especially if we want to go for promotion. We're going to need our strikers to take their chances when they come because we're not going to dominate every game and some games are going to be tough and we're going to have to dig in. So it's really pleasing to see that. But the player I really want to talk about is Johan Gufran. He'd never played under Rafa Benitez until Wednesday. He'd never been in a squad or anything. He seemed like he was going to leave. And a lot of fans were criticising him for sticking around and just taking the money because he's on quite high wages. But he's come in the last couple of games. He's done really well. He puts a shift in. He does very well defensively. He helps the left-back out, which in the first couple of games, the left-back was very exposed. So it was really pleasing to see him do that. And he does offer something going forward. He has a bit of pace. And in this division, you know, he's played in Ligue 1 for most of his career and then the Premier League. So this is going to be a step down in quality. So he should be able to do a bit more in the attacking third. So I'm really happy to see him come back in and do something and earn those wages because it's quite annoying when players sit there and sort of take 30, 40 grand a week and don't do anything. And the player that sort of disappointed for me was the goalkeeper, Matt Sells. He's come in from Belgium. He's sort of quite an imposing goalkeeper. He's quite tall. So I thought he'd be quite good at crosses and things, but he didn't look comfortable at all. He was flapping a lot. And on another day, it could have gone bad. He could have been at fault for a goal. He punched out to, I think it was Kodja near the end, and he sort of blazed it over. Yeah. And on another day, he could have taken that, and we could have lost 2 points. And when we've got Tim Krul, Carl Darlow, and Rob Elliott at the club, I don't know what he's doing in the first team. I think those three goalkeepers all have experience in the lower leagues. And, you know, I'd rather have one of those in the team than him. But, you know, I'll give him a chance. It sometimes takes a while to settle in and get used to the physicality. He's obviously a good goalkeeper. He's played in the Champions League. There's Premier League clubs interested in him. So I'll give him a chance. But if he continues to sort of look that uncomfortable, I'd rather he wasn't in the team because it just makes the defence uncomfortable. And, it, you know, they can't trust him to come for crosses. And it is a worry. Finally, before we wrap up.
I thought a bit about yesterday, Jake, actually. I must admit, I thought defensively you were pretty sound, but once or twice we did get in behind you or did get close, it looked suddenly a little bit all over the place. And I wonder if that was part of it. Agree. I thought Diarmi had a good game yesterday for an hour and we went off then. And Gayle, as you say, I mean, Rafa must have been delighted yesterday because it was such an organised performance. You were so well structured. Your back four barely moved from their flat back four line the whole game. They were, you know, really disciplined. And it was exactly the sort of performance you'd expect to see from a Benitez side. And as you said earlier, you're going to need someone like Gayle up front to take those chances because you're probably not going to create hundreds of chances in a game with him in charge. But with Diarmi and Richie supplying Gayle, you've got that chance to snatch these one and two chances when they come along.
Yeah, I think it was just that. It was the perfect away performance, I think. You know, get the early goal and then just be well organised.
Yeah.
Sort of keep the clean sheet. And I don't think you created too many clear-cut chances. Like, you had a lot of the ball in the final third.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you were getting in and going and shooting loads. And I think the shakiness in the defence is probably due to the goalkeeper. And I expect that to improve either when he does or when he's replaced. So I'm a bit concerned about it at the moment, but I'm not overly worried about it. But yeah, just before we wrap up the podcast today, I just want each of us to give a brief preview of our games next weekend. We'll start with you, George. You've got a trip to Barnsley. How do you see that going?
Well, I'm excited for it, obviously, because it's a Yorkshire derby. I feel like both teams are similar in terms of quality and depth in the side. I feel like, though, as we've turned the corner, I'm much more confident. But I have been impressed with Barnsley and how they've adapted to life in the Championship. Their 2-0 win over a strong Derby side catches the eye. Our new striker, Tom Bradshaw, will be a real danger for us. We missed out on him. We thought we were going to sign him and then he joined them. So he'll definitely be a threat. Our defence does still look a bit shaky, but we're better going forward, so I'm hoping that compensates for it. I think we need to be better coming out and shutting down players, but I think our team's adapting to Stubbs' style. He's a new manager, he's coming from Hibernian, he wants to put his own ideas into the team. He had a clean slate, and I feel like the signings he's brought in are starting to really gel together, but overall, because I think the teams are so similar and a few Barnsley fans follow me, I think I'll go for a draw for this game.
Yeah, just moving on to you now, Chris. Wigan, you host QPR, who started very well and have since sort of gone off the boil. How do you see that going down? Are you confident?
Yeah, our home form's good. We had really good home form last year. Last time we played QPR was when we lost to them in the playoff semis. When did they go back up after that? Yeah, they did. Zamora ended up scoring in the final. They played Barnsley Tuesday night in a game that was end to end, and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank didn't seem too happy with the performance of the referee at the end, who coincidentally is a Wiganer that I went to school with, so I found that quite funny. I think we should do all right. It depends on which Wigan turns up. If it's the Wigan from yesterday, then we're always looking like a liability to concede goals. But when we've got the firepower that we have, I think we can do all right.
Yeah, and Paul, you've got the third relegated side. Obviously, you've lost to Norwich and Newcastle. Do you think it's third time lucky and you can get something from the game against Aston Villa?
I think we've got to be hopeful, yeah. I mean, being at home, you've got to see this one as the most winnable of those three. We all respect to Villa, but the way they went down last year, there's a lot of rebuilding to do there. And but they are starting to do that. And I think, you know, no idea yet really what sort of side we're going to be facing there next week. You know, signings are coming in. I think, you know, in Chester, Jedinak and McCormack, they've got a pretty strong championship core now. You know, one or two more signings this week potentially alongside that, and it could be quite a challenging lineup we're facing. But yeah, got to be hopeful. So yeah, we've got to, I think Lee Johnson recognised after the game yesterday, we've got to do something to create more chances, as you sort of indicated. You know, we didn't create a lot, although we had a lot of possession in and around the box. So it'd be interesting to see how we change things and try and put Villa under a bit more, you know, direct pressure, maybe in their actual 18-yard box, and see if we can attack any of that frailty that's still there from the end of last season.
Yeah, I saw Tony Zia today, just bringing him up again. He tweeted that they've got a world-class striker coming in. So I'm excited to see Messi turn up at Bristol City next week. I'm very excited to see that. But yeah, just Newcastle, we've got a home game against Brighton. I think it's on Sky, the late kickoff. So that's going to be a very, very interesting game because Brighton are a good team. They were very unlucky not to go up last year. They've kept all their players. They've added Glenn Murray, Oliver Norwood, who's good in this division. So, you know, they're going to be a tough game. They haven't lost yet as well. So the pressure's going to be on us to win. I think we need to win our home games. We lost to Huddersfield in our opening game at St James' Park. I don't think we can afford another loss. I think Brighton should go there with so much confidence because they can look to play counter us, sort of play on the break, get Anthony Knockout running at our left back. So whoever plays, neither of them are that great when they're being run at, Paul Dubbett or Kieran Clark. So I think they should go. I think it's going to be a very tough game. I'm not looking forward to it. But I did see their match against Reading. I saw sort of extended highlights and they looked quite shaky at the back. And I think we are a better team than Reading. And if they couldn't beat them, it's just stupid to think of it this way. But I'm fairly confident, but you know I do respect Brighton as a team, so I'm going to go for a draw. I think it's going to be it's early in the season. Both teams are likely to be up in the top six, and neither of them will really want to lose. So I think it's going to be it's going to be an entertaining game. But I think it's going to end 1-1. So that's my prediction for that. And with that, we are now out of time. So thanks so much for coming on today, guys. If you'd just like to tell people where they can reach you or any sort of projects you're involved in, now would be a good time.
My Twitter handle's GeorgioUSC. I have a YouTube channel where I do football vlogs and I sometimes talk about my opinions on games and things around the world of football. And I also write for the Football Forecast, so I always share my articles on Twitter if you want to check those out.
I write for the Model to Football Express, which is a Wigan fanzine, every now and then. You can follow that at the editor of that, at Mudhutter. I'm also on Twitter myself with at L Balson, ELBALSON. Thank you.
And Paul Binning, Bristol City blogger. You can find me at the Exiled Robin on Twitter.
Yeah, and you could get all my writings, EPL Index, The Boot Room, Newcastle 360. I literally spend all my time writing. I've started doing championship betting previews for Get Bet Smart. So that I'm not doing great. I've got 4 out of 9 right so far. And, you know, if you want to lose money, check them out. But, yeah, thanks so much for listening today. And we hope you can all join us again soon.